humanitarian world. And, you know, I believe for good reasons, it seems, certainly religious devotion after 9/11 or just around 9/11 and wanted to set up an NGO. But he quickly became acquainted with people at the Pentagon. And there was a now retired general, Jerry Boykin, who was a three-star general under Rumsfeld, who ran their intelligence unit, who created this program and a series of cutouts to fund Hiramine so that he could go abroad as a spy for the Pentagon. Really remarkable story.
And finally, the significance of all of these missionary, as you call them, spies.
Well, I think, you know, it's important to remember that most of the organization and most of the people working on that program were unwitting. That's what was galling. The issue is that the minute you use humanitarians, missionaries as your cover, you put them in danger. And the worst
part is...
You put all missionaries in danger. And the worst is the people who were doing the work had no idea.
I want to thank you both for being with us. A fascinating hour. We're going to continue this discussion after the broadcast and post online at democracynow.org, particularly looking at Yemen and Somalia, the drone strikes. Jeremy Scahill, Matthew Cole, thanks so much for joining us, both with The Intercept. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thank you.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8 o'clock. You may know that KBOO Radio has been broadcasting in Portland since 1968. Not only do we provide thought-provoking news, live performance, and excellent music, we provide broadcast training and access. We're asking you to help us celebrate KBOO by voting for us in the Willamette Week's Best of Portland poll. Cast your vote during the nomination phase from now until March 31st. There are a few categories KBOO fits in, so write us as often as you can. And don't forget to nominate your favorite shows and hosts. For more information, including a link to the poll online and category suggestions, go to kboo.fm/BOP2016.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Smoldering Fires, produced by Passenart. The play runs from March 11th through April 10th at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center in Portland. Smoldering Fires explores how to apply the ideas and struggles of the civil rights movement to contemporary city life through the point of view of two young friends who differ in temperament and approach. Again, that's Smoldering Fires, March 11th through April 10th at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center, 5340 Northeast Interstate Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at KBOO.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Pan-African film series hosted by the All African People's Revolutionary Party. The film this month is Assata Shakur Talks About Socialist Development in Cuba, showing Wednesday, March 30th at 6 p.m. at the Portland State University Smith Memorial Student Union in room 236. The former Black Panther and member of the Black Liberation Army, who has had political asylum in Cuba since 1984, talks about socialist practices in Cuba, racism, patriarchy, and the way forward for socialist politics. Again, that's Assata Shakur Talks About Socialist Development in Cuba, Wednesday, March 30th at 6 p.m. at the Smith Memorial Student Union in room 236 at Portland State University, 1825 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
No, this is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world. You cast your vote.
Spring break, Alex! And we came back here with the Emperor's crutches! And good morning, good morning. It's 5 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. You are, in fact, listening to KBOO, your very own community radio station, KBOO Portland. And this is Positively Revolting. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And today we have with us our special guest, Teresa Mitchell, freshly back from the campfires of the Oregon Coast Range.
That's special.
You smell like a campfire still, which I find impressive.
That's part of the special.
It is. It is. I always like it when people roll in and still have twigs in their hair. That's awesome. And why are we doing this thing? Well, it's Friday morning and it's time for Positively Revolting Talk Radio. And what are we doing this morning? Well, this is the thing. We couldn't actually decide. The news of this week has been so widely varied.
So much.
Full of...
It was so much.
It was so much. There was so much of that. And so many things are really hugely important to talk about that we couldn't really decide amongst them. So we decided to have a show of a week in review. A what the heck was that show? Or, yeah, that week, it really happened. So what are we talking about? There are a number of things, each one kind of, you know, making me a little screamier than the
one
before.
Each one more wonderful than the next.
Yeah, that's the other way to put it.
Well, this is the epitome of living in interesting times, isn't it?
It is that.
The curse, the old Chinese curse.
So we have, on the one hand, we have a presidential election that is really scraping the bottom of the barrel in rhetoric and in principle, especially as it's coming out between Republican candidates. You know, and I got to say, this is, well, I think Lynn said it best when she quoted a Guardian article this morning that was the... you're waving your arms. She said it best when she quoted a Guardian article this morning saying that this was a show or an election that launched 1,000 women's studies dissertations. And
actually, it was the author that said that, not me. But
like you quoted a Guardian mm-hmm. article. Mm-hmm. And it was a fantastic assessment. Because what we have now, of course, is Trump and Rubio. Well, Trump started it. Okay. Insulting wives. And you know, Trump has been doing this actually throughout this campaign cycle. And that is insulting women on their looks. And so we wanted to check that out. Not only in the campaign, but I want to sort of extrapolate that as to feminism today. What are we doing still, you know, this whole looksism, the idea that women must appear a certain way to have any value. We've seen that pop up over and over again in really unseemly ways over the last few months. There was King Rush, the jerk that wanted to have global meetups to discuss the neo-masculinity and how rape is okay. You know, he also put it out there rather strongly that women's worth is only in their looks. And we see Trump really pushing that line hard as well. So on the one hand, there's that. On another hand, there's a new level of hyperbole and fear-mongering and, oh my God, I don't even, I can't say these words on television, on radio. And that's the hatred and vitriol around trans people and bathroom use. That has reached a level of nigh on. Well, it's gotten kind of hysterical this week. So there's that issue. And Lynn, you were
and as you were saying that, I thought for a second because we definitely want to talk about what's going on with the trans thing. I was also thinking about the new vitriol and hatred. With terrorists, Muslim terrorist attacks, where there is not one ounce of looking, except I did hear Glenn Greenwald look behind things yesterday on Democracy Now, of looking behind, and he said this also, what is making this happen? What is making people want to do things like this? There's not one ounce of that. There is just the We will now put the alert to fuchsia, whatever color. I'm looking at your hair and thinking that. But whatever color they want to have that morning, there is not one one bit of introspection at the moment. And I see that with all the things that we're talking about, there seems to be a lack of introspection.
Ooh, yes, I concur.
It's a time of reaction and vitriol that is kind of unparalleled in my lifetime at the moment.
Well, and speaking of terrorist attacks, I mean, I understand many people died in Belgium. And yet, headlines today, 50 people died in Yemen. Oh, in a U.S. airstrike. Again,
that's different.
Because it's an official state-sponsored act of terror, and not. Explain me again how that. Okay, maybe that could be a listener calling and explaining to me, because I think I need some explaining this morning. I don't really get that. So, dear listener, we invite you to call in and vent your spleen as well, because you know. We haven't even gotten to North Carolina yet. There are so many things. We have not even touched on the fact that, well, throughout this campaign cycle, throughout this election season so far, many, many precincts, not just Arizona, but many precincts have ran out of ballots. Who's to figure that people vote? And why would precincts have ballots in the first place? Because apparently we've fallen out of the habit of voting. So when there's a little higher turnout, people are just out of luck. What's going on with that? And what are we doing here in Multnomah County to safeguard our ballots? Do we have enough? We're vote by mail, so we're a little up on that. But it does give me cause for pause. What's going on here?
And the difference between the vast, vast difference between voter fraud and voter suppression. Because folks talk about voter fraud. I heard that some guy at a Trump rally was after they arrested him for pushing someone around, they found out that he'd voted two or three times someplace. That's the only one that I know of. There is no voter fraud. There is voter suppression. They are highly, highly different things.
I think the phrase is statistically insignificant.
Thank you very much, Teresa. That's why we bring her along in the morning for things like this.
And Teresa, how are you feeling this morning?
As soon as I wake up, I'll let you know.
Okay. Well, it's good that you're here. You make good coffee. That's very important.
Thank you.
503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning if you, too, would like to vent your spleen. Where does that phrase come from anyway? I know, it's back to the humors and the barber was the doctor. I know. Okay.
I know, but whenever I hear it, I see this sort of camera style rotating screen opening, you know, right in your gut, and whatever comes out of your spleen comes out.
That's an interesting visual.
Starts off with
a
sound that sounds like those people.
503-231-8187, the number to call.
Or you can email us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. You can also get in touch with us on the Book of Face at Positively Revolting. And yes,
in the
Twitter sphere as well, at Positive Revolt.
Indeed. So it's true, North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory signed the sweeping anti-LGBT law that popped up seemingly out of just about nowhere. And was passed in an emergency session just a couple days ago there in North Carolina. I believe it seemed like it was about 36 hours from start to finish. Introduce this thing, slam it through, and vote on it in an emergency session because, well, there was an emergency. People were about to gain the right to use bathrooms unhassled. Stop. North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory signed the sweeping new law banning local governments from passing laws prohibiting discrimination against LGBT people.
Ooh, ooh, can I quote him? Can I quote him?
In public accommodations. Yes, you may.
I just love this. He signed this bill because the previous bill allowed men to use women's bathrooms and locker rooms.
Yes, yes. That is, that's the tone of the discourse around that. And I think what I find particularly disheartening and what kept me up a couple nights this week, because people were wrong on the internet, is that I'm not only hearing that from creepy Christian right wingers who are a little obsessed on yes, let's just say a little obsessed with genitalia. But I'm also hearing it from a very distinct and loud section of radical feminism. I have been completely undone trying to point out to some of my sisters that they are in fact being oppressive as heck, and that they really need to update their attitudes. And I find it disheartening. I guess I'm kind of used to the radical right, those that want theocracy. You know, I'm used to those folks trying to deny me rights, trying to deny rights to others. But I'm not used to that from my feminist sisters. What the heck? What the heck is going on? 231-8187, the number to call. And you too can join us. Just like Mahatma. Good morning, Mahatma Jones. How are you doing?
I'm awake for the first time and listening to your show. How's
I was going to say, this is not your time of day.
I am working security at the Bernie Sanders rally today.
So
I have to get up early to be there early.
Yes.
And, you know, I just got to say, in a world where I'm doing security, that's as close to utopia as it gets. I mean, think about that.
I already am thinking about that.
What are your standards for security, Mahatma?
Please don't kill anybody.
Okay.
And I'm okay with everything else. And can you finish that drink before you get in, because my bosses are watching. there you go.
Just curious.
That's my idea of security too. That's good.
If I'm doing security, the world is in a good place. So,
okay.
I will take that to heart. I guess I'm plugging for Bernie. Anyway, the spleen, I believe, I'm no doctor, is where bile is manufactured.
It does have something to do with that bile thing. Although I think, wasn't that the gallbladder?
No, that's where it's stored.
That's where, okay.
So, being an expert ranter raver myself and fairly fluent in bile, I think that your spleen means like just, this is what's bugging me today.
Mm-hmm.
Like your show. So you,
my show's bugging you today?
If you want to change the name from positively revolting, you could do a serving of your daily dose of bile. I
that is so appealing. Thank you.
And that's good. Why I don't get up this early.
I was going to say, you go run off and make people secure now.
Well, exactly. But I was up, and I'm getting out, and I said, oh, Connie's on. I'm going to get a chance to listen to her show because I'm up this early, and thank you. And it is great. It's fun. You guys are a lot of fun. And you know, if you ever go on later, I'll listen regularly.
All right. Well, you know, you could always
get a job driving
taxi or something. Okay.
And hi, Teresa. Thanks, guys.
You take good care.
Good morning.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, you can always use the app now and listen when you want.
That's
the KBOO
true.
App.
But then
that's right.
He wouldn't be able to call in.
True.
It's a little more, you know, it's still good.
Yes, you can call in and use the app at the same time, you know. If you, depending on how
well,
kind
that's
of phone
true.
You have.
That's true. You could do that.
Clarify that.
True. Let's look around here and see. Allah, Tom, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
I heard you mentioning the thing, the terrorist attack that took place in Brussels this morning,
mm-hmm.
and what you mentioned about that really hit a note with me. We have been messing with those people since the time of the Crusades, and maybe they're just a little bit tired of it.
You think? We don't want people blowing. You don't. It would be nice to not blow people up. That would. I'm not in any way, shape, or form condoning that.
No, I don't think that's right. But I think that they seem. I mean, if I were one of those people, they seem to have very little recourse to. Kind of get their message out. I mean, it's just like we're deaf. We don't talk about it. We're bombing them with drones and killing thousands of civilians. And nobody even mentions that. It's just kind of, I mean, they're so frustrated. What are they going to do?
Yeah.
And then they come to another country. They can't get employment. They're treated poorly. I mean, those poor people have a lot of frustration in their lives that I have never experienced, and I don't know what I would do with that.
I think that's an extremely important point. And, you know, the idea that war brings peace makes as much sense as the rest of the novel 1984, right? That we can bomb our way to security instead of, in fact, this kind of violent suppression of whole nations and entire peoples will, in fact, beget further violence, right?
Or restrict our way to security.
Constructive things with our money instead of building bombs and killing people, it would make a better world.
I mean, do you think? Walls?
It hasn't worked very well, you know, for quite a few years.
Yeah, and they keep on doing it, huh?
They keep on doing it.
I believe that's the definition of insanity.
Hey, I appreciate your program. Thank you so
thanks
much.
Thanks so much for calling in, Tom.
Bye-bye.
And, for anyone that wanted to know, it's true that the venting of the spleen does go back to the humors, back when barbers were doctors. The humor that was associated with the spleen was thought to be the cause of anger. And if anyone wants to look at medieval medical practices, see, I did a thesis on this. I was a medieval studies major for a while. That's true. I wrote my senior thesis on the Black Plague. Okay. I was a little gothy. Anyway.
The gothest plague ever.
If you wanted to know, the body was seen to have four humors. They went to different emotional states. And the humor associated with the spleen was thought to cause anger. So if you had an overabundance of anger, then you would have your spleen vented to lose some of that humor. I think you'd probably also die in the process. I mean, medieval medicine wasn't particularly good. Let's go ahead and put that out there, too. I'm not recommending it. I'm just saying it's a good phrase. 503-231-8187, the number to call this morning if you would like to join us. And Tom and Mahatma there, who have all done this morning so far. You can also, of course, follow along throughout the week on Facebook. Where you can find us, our page is Positively Revolting, and on the Twitterverse, at Positive Revolt. So, I want to get back to looksism for a minute. There is, for folks that have not seen this, perhaps you don't twit, perhaps you've not looked at mainstream news this week. Well, congratulations, and I salute you at this moment, because if you had, you'd have these images stuck in your head forever. Some group put out there in the Twitterverse a a sort of sexy pose picture of Trump's wife, Melania, who, you know, was posing for a magazine shot. It was a very glamour pose. And it was basically slut-shaming and, you know, saying, hey, you know, here's your wife. I'm already a little screamy about this, right? So his response, of course, only made it worse. And again,
he said, you're more of a coward than I thought, blah, blah, blah. Stephen J. Duckett, a sociologist and professor, calls it the whip factor. The way American politics have long been shaped by men's stark fear of being feminized.
Oh, goodness.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, well, there's that. That's a whole nother show. We'll get to that in a moment. But the ever popular response to that, Lion Ted, you know, how dare you bring my wife into this? He tweets back, if you don't stop, I'll spill the beans on Heidi. Or on your wife, right? What the heck kind of threat is that? You know, and now we're just like sliding straight down this tunnel of, you know, I don't even know what, right? All of a sudden we're slamming wives as part of the political process. And I mean, he'd already done this to Ben Carson earlier, you know.
Well, historically, apparently it's out there. Teddy Roosevelt once called Woodrow Wilson a white-handed Miss Nancy. And the Wall Street Journal ran a piece a few years ago saying, we've already had a woman president. It was Jimmy Carter.
Well, okay, so the whole looking at how we view masculinity on the one hand is that's definitely there, and that's part and parcel, but it's a little different than the point I'm making, which is looking, it's slamming each other's wives,
right.
Not, you know, not talking about Trump's stubby fingers, which was, you know, that's a whole low bar that I don't even, anyway, we'll get to that apparently in a minute too. But, you know, Ted says, no, he didn't do that. That was some other group that did that. And Trump goes ahead and puts out there a picture of a side by side sort of comparison of Cruz's wife, Heidi, where she is caught sort of in a mid grimace, sort of a paparazzi shot of not having any expectation your picture was being snapped, and his wife in a glamour shot pose, looking a lot like a supermodel. And said, you know, no need to spill the beans. A picture's worth a thousand words. Here are our wives. You know,
he was going
to
spill beans on his wife. Now, the picture I get is like, I want to see that.
I think that's
out
of the musical Tommy. Like, that's a whole different thing. Heinz being shooting out of the television and Margaret in a chair.
Something like that.
I'm going back in time. But again, I just want to say, what kind of politician is running on a platform of my wife is prettier than your wife? What? I mean, where have we gone? And can we get about talking to about looksism in general and how women are worth more than our physical appearances? I know it's a wacky concept. I know it's 2016 and I don't want to shock anyone. It's a little early in the morning, but we are worth more than our physical appearances. What the hell? And Trump? Really? What kind of wiggle room you got there, hamster hair? So I'm just, you know.
Well, like, that's because men are about money. They're not about how they look.
Oh, yeah.
But, did you not get that memo?
But if you talk about his stubby fingers, he will go off in a presidential debate about other parts of his anatomy. Like, really? Where has the bar gone? I don't feel like we have to step over the bar. I feel like we have to dig to find the bar at this point. And that's okay. So there, I'll end my rant for this section.
Though,
carry on.
You know, when Dukakis was running in '88, he and I forget it. So much has happened; it's hard to remember everything. He so he was asked about the death penalty, because I believe he was not for it. If his wife was raped, would you support the death penalty if your wife was raped and murdered? And what he did was respond not uproariously and angrily. Instead of answering from a policy perspective, he answered. He did answer from a policy perspective instead of an emotional perspective, and his candidacy was considered dead in the water after that because he wasn't willing to protect his woman. How could he protect the country?
Oh my!
And then he was in that tank, but that's another story. That's not what that was about. It was still about the reference to his wife.
Right. Goodness gracious. So that's, again, where we're at. I want to get back to talking about the pitch of the arguments against trans people using bathrooms. I want to look at how that law was slam dunked in North Carolina. I want to talk about the sexism that is overabundant in the political campaigns, the presidential campaigns. It's also actually very abundant in the Democratic race, I got to say, as people go after Clinton in ways that I find absolutely sexist.
Because there's plenty of other ways to do it.
You just got
to
actually
think go there.
A little bit.
You don't
people
have to go
just
there.
Think a little bit.
Well, things are, as usual, not policy driven. They are personality driven. They are emotional issue driven. Instead of, there's plenty to in my opinion anyway, to look at with Hillary Clinton as far as her policies go. I don't have to go for anything else.
You know, and I just got to say, a listener has commented through the internets to say that Trump's supporters are scaring the bejesus out of her. And I think that Not without cause, right? We've seen protesters beaten at Trump rallies. We've seen protesters. That one guy was beaten at the Trump rally, and then he gets arrested, right? The guy that ended up punching him in the face turns himself in after the fact, and you know, basically walks into the police department and says, "Yeah, I did it." You know, not like it was a bad thing. And actually, he went on to say that, you know, if he sees that guy again, you know, he'd probably like to kill him. What the hell is that? You know, and
it's the flying monkeys being released.
Ah, yes.
No there offense to monkeys anywhere.
Anyway, we have Lance on the phone now, and then I think Teresa wants to get going on something. So let's go ahead and talk to Lance before we shift gears. Good morning, Lance.
Good morning, my fellow human beings.
Hello. Hello, you human.
Hello, human.
I'm here to say that, you know, politicians are on the inside track of society, which is probably why they're politicians. I guess Donald Trump had to be a politician to some degree, or else he wouldn't have had the level of where he's at now. He's always been
What character is that level?
Well, a character or a figure. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's played that to his advantage when he was going forward with any of his business ventures. So he's sort of kind of like...
Which were horrible, by the way, well, mostly.
These guys are doing ridiculous stuff, but look at who's entertaining them. We're all entertaining these people. Hmm. And for as long as we're entertaining them, I mean, they're just reflecting society as a whole, and we're playing this little game of tennis with these guys, and that's what makes politicians politicians. They understand this. They understand that the pot is calling the kettle black. If we're all giving these guys this much time on these type of issues, then that's a reflection of where our minds are at.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, they're just eating the sharks. That's all, because they know the sharks want blood. We feed off of it. You know, at least many of us do. The American public. When I say we, I'm talking about the American public. I don't watch any of that stuff. It's too negative, and it insults my intelligence, and it doesn't talk about anything, and it's quite sad.
Yeah, I'm hearing you. You know, and I always have this sort of conflict. A, I feel like I need to stay on top of this stuff because, well, I do this talk radio show, and it's important to know what's going on. And B, I don't want to look at this stuff. This is not reality. Reality is when you wiggle your toes in the dirt and you're feeling, you know, the elements on you. That's real. When you're talking with your friends and actually doing stuff in your community, that's real. The rest of this is bread and circuses. And it's, you know, really become unseemly. And at the same time, if we ignore it, it doesn't go away. And so there's this conundrum.
I'm not saying ignore it. I'm saying is that we have this large audience entertaining this mediocrity of the mind, this insanity that you just spoke of concerning the white thing.
Mm-hmm.
Has nothing to do with TPPI or NAFTA or trade.
Mm-hmm.
And it has
policy. That's called policy.
Well, these guys are wasting airtime, and they're doing a good deal
of totally
public. And the bad thing about it is the American public is eating this up. That's what scares me more than anything.
Right.
Well, it's a public that's been it's very comfortable because it's like a reality TV show.
Yeah.
So it feels very comfortable to a lot of folks.
Yes, yes. And I mean,
and those of us that don't watch TV, it's not so comfortable for. It's odd to us.
Well, I don't like comparing him to the Fuhrer, because what the Fuhrer did was what most politicians do. They just ride the wave of a large group of people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but I mean, let's just look at any politician. They all just, this is what they do,
mm-hmm.
and we eat it up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at the public, and I'm not afraid of the individual. I'm afraid of the people who are pushing these people up.
Right, I hear you.
The Fuhrer didn't come out of nowhere. He had people behind him pushing him in that position back in 1945, pre-Weimar Germany.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not one individual. So that's you know, it's these guys are just reflecting the public. So I'm looking at the public. It's the larger group that I'm more concerned with, not the individual.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Lance. I think, again, what I'm hearing is absolute agreement with Happy Crone, our listener in the Gorge, who says that Trump's supporters are scaring the bejeebus out of her. And yeah, I concur that there is this groundswell of people who are eating up the sensationalism and who actually are comfortable with reality TV show lives and are actually looking to justify their bigotry, their hatred, and find the leader that will take them there. I concur. So, Teresa, let's bring you into the conversation.
What do you have to say for yourself,
You've had a
Madame?
Cup of coffee. I'm seeing you perk up.
Well, we've been talking about Trump, and we've been talking about transgender issues, and of course the framework is that, pardon me, that the latest thing is North Carolina, I think it is passing at the last minute. You can't open up the bathrooms to everyone. That shtick is so poisonous, and they know it, and that's why they use it. And it's the idea that instead of like dealing with why people are uncomfortable with or frightened by transgenderism, they're going to say, well, it's really about protecting my daughter from some guy walking into the bathroom. And they make little commercials that show some, stubbly guy walking into the girl's room. And they want to scare you. But it makes me think of, I'm a bus driver, and one of the towns I go into every day is Oregon City. And in Oregon City, the last people who had steady work are the grandparents at this point. There are generations who are disenfranchised and impoverished because the trees have been taken out. The timber companies have folded. The paper plant was outcompeted because, politicians refused to protect. I mean, the paper plant was producing perfectly cheap paper. I wasn't happy with the way they were doing it because they were polluting the Willamette with dioxins, but it's gone. So everyone has alienation and despair, and they don't know what to do about it. They live in alienation and despair. And then you have Trump come along, or any demagogue, really. And they've got their Blut-era politics. I was saying blood and honor in German in order to be bloody-minded. And they say to them, essentially, look, this thing you're experiencing is comprehensible. You can act on it. And they're not going to tell them, we need to form cooperatives and demand a socialist form of government. They're going to tell them that people of color and gay, lesbian, and trans peoples are, diluting the fabric of their life, and so they haven't been able to work smart and hard enough because they're fighting off all of these Untermenschen. And again, I'm using that that word sarcastically, and nearly running afoul of Godwin's law. But there are some parallels, and that's what's really happening. I mean, the real issue is maldistribution of wealth. The real issue is the fact that we don't treat each other with respect in the society we compete, which means that under white supremacy and under class oppression, just about everybody loses.
Yeah.
So here we are, and this comes back to the legislature saying that at the last minute, which shows their fear, a law had been passed.
Bathrooms, basically, the new frontier.
Yeah, I know. And that, as I was saying, that sets the tone of the discourse. It's like, we're not going to talk about whether people are comfortable with or discuss what transgenderism really is, or get past the popular misconception that it's a lifestyle choice. Instead, we're going to pretend that transgender people are essentially dangerous perverts. I mean, that's what the implication of those commercials that gets those laws passed is. The implication is that you're pure, helpless little daughter is going to, have to deal with some guy coming into, her alone space.
Her sanctuary. Which is so what bathroom.
And God knows what's going to happen. And of course, what they're really implying is what is going to happen is rape. And so, this is the idea that trans people are perverts is just an extension of the old all gay and lesbian people are perverts thing, right, that went on for so long. And the very successful conflation of the idea of pederasts being gay, lesbian, trans is now being focused down on trans. And of course, and then the other side of that is that they're so concerned about male to female transgender people that they ignore the existence of female to male. And what that does with people who, once again, just need to use the restroom. And in a sense, it's a beautiful beautiful way of framing it in terms of the power mongers, because that forces people like me to say, hey, I just need to use the giant. Back off. Be human over this issue. And
I want to just bring in another reality of the fact that trans people are being murdered in this country, right? Just this week, another transgendered woman was killed in Los Angeles. That was just a couple days ago. She was the head of a housing, the head of a housing complex where she lived, said that they were just heartbroken about her murder, that everybody loved her, that she was a very popular person, a community activist, and that this is following the murder of at least two transgendered people in February, trans women in February, bringing the total of 20. Last year, 20 transgendered women were murdered. There's actually been a couple of trans men murdered, one in Texas, one in Louisiana, I do believe, as well. This year is looking like we could surpass last year's record number of trans murders. So again, who's really at risk? Trans women being killed in the streets, or there is a trans woman who was killed publicly by her partner in a domestic violence situation, and yet we're having this hyperbole, we're having this fear-mongering about trans women using bathrooms and making them unsafe.
Well, it's just more of the same to skirt, you know, the heck, look over here. Look over here. Don't look at issues. Don't look at policy. Don't look at what's really important.
Smoke and mirrors.
It's smoke and mirrors, and that is what the media consuming public is being led around. You know, the head of CBS was saying that, well, Trump may not be good for the country, but he's really good for us. And I think of that in the same way as tangentially, what's happening as far as the way people are looking at trans issues. It's like not about bathrooms, people. Mm-hmm. It's about people's lives. It's about some form of compassion, and also just having a clear head and looking at what is actually going on instead of what we're being fed, spoon-fed. And a very sickly pablum.
We want America back, they say.
Yeah,
that works pretty well for them, and that implies that there is this fictional America that they can somehow get back. And the thing is, what people really need, what they really want, is economic and social stability. They need a roof over their head, and they need jobs. And right now, the economy, the maldistribution of wealth is so severe that we need a new WPA. We need a new Works Project Administration that gives everybody a job, even if you've got felonies on your record, even if your ID isn't proper. Everybody who wants work can get work. And
or at least a safety net.
Or at least a safety net. And once we did that, then people wouldn't be terrified. They wouldn't be thinking that their kids are going to have an even worse future than the one that they're suffering right now.
Well, but obviously terror serves the system, right?
Yeah.
It's actually the system is the terrorist. Let's go ahead and talk to John. He's been waiting for a long time. John, you're a patient man. Good morning. You're on the air.
Thank you. I sure appreciate your show. I look forward to it every Friday.
Thank you.
I heard, and I don't remember the author's name, that was being interviewed on NPR. It was like last week. She was talking about the way things are going in America. She moved as a poet to Mexico and lives in a small village and really feels community there and support. And whenever she flies back to America to the U.S. for some reason, she feels a real negative energy as soon as she crosses the border.
It's true.
And so then this week I'm reading Eckhart Tolle, who describes something called a pain body and goes way into that we each have a pain body, and collectively we have a pain body. So if our pain body overreacts to something, you know, we could die from overreacting in whatever way, you know, take too much drugs, get in a car accident, whatever it is. And collectively, we can disintegrate our nation with an overreaction. I don't know that we collectively have a pain body, but he says we do, and I'm kind of impressed with all the other stuff.
Well, I can absolutely, for folks that have not traveled abroad recently, I have. I think it's super important to get perspectives from outside of this country. If you have the chance to go out of this country, please take that chance and do it. And I'm pretty sure you too will experience what that poet talked about. Whether you go to Canada, Mexico, or someplace else, when you come back, you notice that there is sort of this malaise. There is an oppression. It's palpable once you get out of it. But while you're here, if you haven't been out of the country for a bit, then it's just the water you swim in, and you don't really notice it.
Well, so, I've noticed in me, if I can add one more quick thing, my roommate melts down a lot. And for me, just reading about this pain body, realizing, well, that's not really his real self melting down. That's you know, I know he's been through a lot of childhood trauma.
Right.
So I've been more sympathetic and easier to get along with just in reading this information.
Yeah, I think that's super important. When people turn towards the mean, it's like that person just behaved in a way that is unpredictable. Now they're upset and they're just going to be mean to that person because that'll show them. In fact, that doesn't help, right? If we actually tried to just stay kind to ourselves and each other, the world actually does improve, because actually I think all of us are in pain. We all have trauma that we are carrying and healing from. If we are mean to each other, we just deepen that trauma and further our alienation, our own and the other person's. So I thank you very much for those words. I absolutely agree with you. And what kind of bird do you have?
He's a cockatiel.
That's what I thought. I used to have a cockatiel. I recognize that chirp.
The one that passed away.
I love birds.
He used to hang upside down and spread his wings wide open. And what he was doing was saying, hey, I'm trading you a wing display for some petting, and then he'd stand up and I'd pet him on the head. We must have made that trade 1,000 times.
Yeah, they're great. I love birds. All right, thank you very much, John, for giving
love
us a call.
All.
Take care.
Let me tag on to that with a quote from President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. By living wages, he said when he was introducing the minimum wage, I mean more than a bare subsistence level. I mean the wages of a decent living, end quote. And that's from 1933 when he was making a statement on the National Industrial Recovery Act.
So you know why he did that, too. He did it because there was going to be a revolution in this country. And it wasn't going to be a capitalist revolution. That was what really, really going to happen. And Roosevelt is one of the fellows, besides doing WPA works, but he did it to save capitalism.
Oh, heck yeah. Bernie's a socialist.
I know. And it saved a lot of people's lives. I mean, I don't think a revolution is always, if that happens, it's a bloody, horrible thing that's hard on people. Capitalism is also hard on people, so I don't see necessarily a win-win with that. But that's the sort of pressure. No president is getting that sort of pressure at this particular point. Franklin Delano Roosevelt also told people, make me do it. And they did. And that sort of has to happen at this point, too. But he didn't have... The media was so gentle, and no one even knew that he was in a wheelchair for a long time. This is we're in a whole different age, but
whole different age.
But yes, people need work. Do they need to have jobs? Do they need to have work that's fulfilling? I mean, how far? Not have this enormous. I just remember being in England at one point, and I don't think it's quite the same now, where people didn't have like ready cash to buy boats and more TVs, but people could go to school for free, and nobody was worried about because the government would subsidize their rent if they couldn't pay it. So there just was not. I just remember this aura of not quite so much tension. John was talking about, and I did hear a new meme too about that. Living in go to Mexico instead of Canada if Trump wins, because then there'll be a wall separating you from him.
Well, there's that. There's a couple of other things that we haven't even got to this morning that have been heavily weighing on my mind. 5-hour lines to vote. I mean, that kind of goes part
voter
and parcel.
Voter suppression, yes.
With the running out of ballots. But I'm just going to say, really? That's happening?
If you close down all but a few polling places.
Yes. What is that about? I guess we don't actually need polling places. We don't need people to actually exercise their right to vote. So there's that. I think also, I wanted to just mention briefly, because we're running out of time, the officer Ling, who is the officer who killed Akai Gurley. And I know there have been so many people killed by the police that a lot of folks have a hard
trouble
time remembering
track, yes.
Who was who. Akai Gurley was the man who was simply walking down a stairwell in his own apartment building because the elevator was out of order. And walking down the stairwell, apparently he startled a rookie cop who was a floor below him, who didn't expect somebody to open a door to the stairwell in the apartment building he was patrolling, because cops patrol tenement buildings in New York City, and fired immediately upon the man entering the stairwell and killed Akai Gurley, who was a new father and, you know,
a person.
Just actually trying to get out of his apartment and, do something. What? Well, you'll be happy to know Officer Lang, the prosecutor, has asked for no time served because, you know, he feels awfully bad about it.
This also calls to attention the amount of tension that cops are, and I don't mean this sympathetically, because you have to be careful not to kill people when you have a gun. That's what I always think. But the amount of tension, the amount of unpopularity that they are enjoying, and that sort of, that they pretty much know they won't be charged with anything. So shoot first, because they're scared. The amount of fear in this country is breathtaking.
Yeah, so the Brooklyn DA is not seeking prison time for Officer Peter Lang after he was convicted of manslaughter. He's facing sentencing on April 14th. But to not get jail time when you fire your gun that you're hypothetically trained to use on somebody for entering a stairwell of a building they live in and not doing anything beyond that, that sends a message, right? That sends a message that that person's life was worthless. That they really, you're culling the herd. You know, it's beyond insulting. It's absolutely outrageous. And I think that we need to keep our eyes on the sentencing. Again, April 14th. For Officer Peter Lang. There's a couple of other things. There's this interesting case before the Supreme Court, wherein it looks like they are tying, and that's on a contraception case, whether religious organizations have to pay for contraceptives in their insurance. There is now a 4-4 split on the court. And if that holds, the ruling is due by the end of June. But at this point, it's a split vote. So if that holds, it actually bounces the ruling to the lower courts, which is, in fact, yes, you have to actually offer health insurance that includes contraceptives. So that's an interesting turn of events.
You know what? The other thing, and this is a little bit off topic, but everything, you know, we are, that's what we are this morning. Blue Mountain, we told these folks we would announce.
You are so right.
Blue Mountain's Biodiversity Project. Give yourself something that you can feel positive about. Do this. Blue Mountain's Biodiversity Project is having a benefit show for our forest defense work on March 25th. That would be today. From 7 to 10 at Velo Cult on 1969 Northeast 42nd Boulevard in Portland, Oregon, right here. Cinderwell, Brenna Sahachita? Sahachina? I'm totally mispronouncing Brenna's last name.
Sahatahina.
Sahatahina, thank you very much. And Mistaken for Ghost will be playing. The event is all ages. There will be raffle. There will be raffle prizes and a short presentation by the project's director, Karen Coulter, about our ecological protection work in Eastern Oregon. Funds raised for the benefit will help support this. So come on out. If you have questions, there's actually a number to call, 510-715-6238. And paula.e.hood@gmail.com. You can email her, too. So go on out to the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project benefit.
And yes, super important to make sure that we are staying on point, right? We are doing things that are actually good for the world and not just decrying,
kind of,
oh my God,
kind of
what
positively revolting things.
Yes, you know, like that. So I believe we have time for one caller, possibly two, but one. Let's see how fast we can make this. Good morning, Camilo. You are on the air.
Good morning. I have a couple of observations, and I think one is particularly relevant to you on the program who are expressing outrage and anger and a hint of revenge fantasy. I just started a Buddhist meditation practice, and I was curious as to how would Buddhist meditation deal with something like what happened in Belgium. So I went on the internet to see if there was anything. And it so happened that about 10 years ago, the birthplace of Buddha was bombed. Mm-hmm. And Shambhala Publications came out with a free book, which all of you can access. It's called Beyond Anger, How to Hold On to Your Heart and Your Humanity in the Midst of Injustice. Mm-hmm. And I recommend just going online and downloading it and looking at what it says.
Cool enough. I'm familiar, actually, with that book. And still, I believe very strongly that anger is a valid emotion. But anger tells you that something is wrong, and it needs to spur you to action. And you cannot act directly out of that anger. You have to actually release the anger first. I usually recommend people do that through, say, a walk in meditation or drumming or pounding some clay or something that is a creative process that you can release the anger into. To actually know that it is time for you to take action to change something, because that's the message of anger. I understand other people believe that anger is a poison and has no place in our lives. And I think that's interesting.
Well, the book just discusses a lot of these sort of complex and subtle aspects of it. I recommend it to everyone.
Thank you, Camilo. We have to go. We are just totally running out of show. I'm so sorry.
But in fact, this is the time that we now have to sign off. With that, we are, in fact, positively revolting as ever. And we'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening.
And take good care. So much. Stay in touch. You can find us, Positively Revolting, on Facebook or at Positive Revolt on the Twitter sphere.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the film screening of Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths on Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center in Portland. The film will be introduced by Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. There will also be a Q&A session after the film. Again, that's a screening of the film, Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths with Richard Gage, Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center, 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Extreme Amateur Games Scooter Competition Qualifier.